Welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News. It is Friday, December 12, 2014, and I'm Leanne McAdoo. Here are tonight's top stories.
Tonight, a heated debate concerning the official story of Sandy Hook. That's next on the InfoWars Nightly News.
Just from a lay media investigative journalist perspective, something is rotten here.
After a week of manufactured government shutdown drama, the House has managed to pass a $1.1 trillion spending bill. And now those same conservatives that helped to push this through to the Senate are raging against their leaders, basically saying that they have squandered away a landmark electoral victory in just about 1 month. Now they have maneuvered themselves into a position where the losers, in this case, the Democrats, are going to be able to demand their support for a bill that's going to effectively grant the losing party power through 2015. That is half the term for the incoming Congress. So everyone that we basically just voiced our opinions and voted and said, we want y'all out of there. Well, now they're going to have a $1.1 trillion spending bill to go ahead and continue their agenda for the next year. Now, if you get a chance to check out this article, it's on humanevents.com. It's a really long article entitled Cromnibus, a Winter Festival of Unrestrained Spending. And it does a really good job at breaking this down. Basically, the sole reservation in this winter spending festival is the Department of Homeland Security. It's only funded through February. So the GOP leadership is going to pretend that it's going to stage this huge fight over Obama's illegal amnesty orders next year. So that's basically they're holding out their big fight, their big guns. They're going to pull out the big guns. Then the author of this article says that this is supposedly to mollify those of us who still care about antiquated notions like the rule of law, the separation of powers, the value of citizenship and national security. Of course, this is just long enough for the establishment to enjoy its holiday vacation. But pointing out the facts, there was no reason to give the defeated Democrats anything except a stopgap bill, which would have kept the government funded through January, at which point the incoming Republican majority Congress could have exercised control over everything. And if Democrats didn't like that, well, then they could have just shut down the government, allowed the government to shut down, and then they would have had to explain to all of the voters, why they needed to give their support to this party that they just tried to throw out of the government. They would basically be in a position where they'd have to explain to all of us why we need to allow them to have power for the next year. Does this make sense to anyone? Definitely not me. So let's take a look at what's in this. Well, there's more money for the ISIS-linked Syrian rebels. $500 million to be exact. Now, this is going to be used to equip appropriately vetted elements of the Syrian opposition who are going to defend the Syrian people from attacks by the Islamic State of Iraq and or ISIS. And you'll recall that back in September, ISIS signed a truce with the remaining rebel groups, and they are now working together against the Syrian government. We reported on that. We reported that they had joined forces. They said they're the most powerful in the region, so of course we're going to work with them. And, you know, maybe they're not aligned, these people that are getting these equipment and all these $500 million, maybe they're not aligned with ISIS at the moment, but just like Rand Paul said, and like we have told you, most of the arms that we have given to the so-called moderate rebels have wound up in the hands of ISIS. They've either simply taken them, it's given to them, or we mistakenly give them to some of these radicals, thinking that they are moderates. And of course, what else is in the Cromnibus, right? It's a 1,600 plus page bill that is way too big for any of our super busy elected representatives to read so they can rush off to their Christmas break. It has to be passed or else the government is going to shut down. So just pass it. Don't worry about what's in it. It has a nice little provision for the banksters. And once again, it's going to put the FDC on the hook for financial derivatives losses. So it is a giveaway to Wall Street. Nancy Pelosi, here I agree with her, she said it privatizes the gain and nationalizes the risk. So basically, if the banksters succeed in these risky derivatives, they are going to pocket the money. If they fail, the taxpayer is on the hook. And this is much bigger than the collapse in 2008 because that only represented 1/20 of the American economy. This represents the GDP of the globe. And here to basically break down what this monstrosity of a spending bill is, it's nothing more than modern day slavery. Here is David Knight.
Well, what we learned this week is that Congress wasted no time in leveraging their power and using derivatives to do it. Now, to give you a little bit of background as to what they've done before we talk about just how damaging this is going to be for the American taxpayer, for your wealth, go back to the original Depression. A large part of what happened with that was speculative options that were being sold. People were buying stocks on margin. As a response to that, they created the Glass-Steagall Act, which would basically remove that kind of speculative investment away from banks. Banks would be insured by the government, but only if they stayed to a core business that was very conservative. We saw that removed before the banking crisis of the early 2000s. That allowed banks to get once more into the derivatives market to start getting into these options. And, of course, they used the derivatives on mortgages, breaking the chain of title, securitizing the mortgages, selling bits and pieces of them, mixing them all up. That's a big story. We've talked about that before. And they were prohibited, supposedly, by the Dodd-Frank bill. Now, this week, we see the Republican Congress stripping that away, again, allowing banks to get back into completely speculative derivatives, but this time, it's a much larger market. When this happened with mortgages, the amount that we bailed the banks out of, about $700 to $800 billion, was about 1/20 of our gross domestic product here in the United States. We all felt that. We saw what happened to people who had homes as the market crashed on their values. They couldn't refinance. They couldn't sell. The banks were able to buy that up cheaply, get into the market at the bottom. Now what they want to do is they want to pull in derivatives all over the world. This is a market that was estimated about 4 years ago to be 1.2 quadrillion. Quadrillion. The entire economy of all the earth, all of the countries together, all of the gross domestic products is estimated to be about $60 trillion. So we're looking at a derivative market here that's not 1/20 the size of the U.S. economy, but is 20 times the size of all the economies on the earth. And they want you, the American taxpayer, to pay for it. Congress is leveraging your wealth for their power. And make no mistake about it, that's what this is about. In this bill, they also raise the amount of money that people can, the limits, the caps that people can give to the Republican National Committee, to the Democrat National Committee. They raise that limit from $34,000 to $324,000, a tenfold increase. And of course, that's just where the leverage begins. Jamie Dimon at JP Morgan, as well as the Citigroup, have both been leveraging their investments, their campaign contributions, their lobbying fees into this specific type of legislation. For the last couple of years, Citicorp and JP Morgan have each given $5 million to Congress as well as getting them on the phone. What do they get for that $5 million investment? They get access to a quadrillion dollars worth of insurance. That's a million-to-one return on their, not even a million-to-one, that's $1 million return for every dollar they spent. It's much higher than that return of investment. So that's what they're putting you on the hook for. They're going to have you on the hook insuring their risks throughout the world. Is it time for Atlas to shrug? David Knight, Infowars.com.
So it's absolutely a complete monstrosity. Why are our elected officials not hanging their heads in shame? Once again, they're saying they do all this for the will of the American people. Did we not make our will clear there in the last elections? Now, remember about a week ago, we had reports of a senior Korean Air executive demanding that her flight be turned back around and go back to the terminal because the flight attendant dared to serve her nuts in a bag rather than a bowl. Well, here she is now giving a press conference, literally hanging her head in shame. This is how she's giving her press conference. She's so embarrassed for what she did, acting all elite and forcing this plane to turn back around. She hangs her head in shame. Wouldn't it be magnificent if we could see our own elected officials hanging their head in shame? Even Weiner didn't go out and give press conferences like this when he got caught doing all that sexting and stuff. We have people here torturing others, giving them rectal rehydration, doing all kinds of random things with nuts in a bag, and they don't hang their head in shame. They just say, we did it for the will of the American people. Now, joining me in studio is Rob Dew. Rob, no wonder we have record numbers of American people for gun ownership rather than gun control.
Because exactly.
People say they can't trust this government.
They don't trust it, and right there is a perfect example of a public servant. A public servant hangs their head in shame when they're wrong. A government official pretends they never do any wrong, and they go about their life and pretend that it doesn't affect them. And so there you have a perfect example of a public servant. That's how our officials need to act. They need to act like public servants. And it really is scary. I've got a piece of video we're working on now, and let me tell you, the reason people want to own guns is because they know the government is gearing up for a war against them. And we're about to drop something probably Saturday or Sunday that's gonna confirm everything we've been talking about for years.
Yeah, and I mean, you could just see with the current events and everything going on in Ferguson, and there with now with Eric Garner, and then Tamir Rice, the shift was most substantial. The shift for gun ownership was most substantial among African Americans. It went had a 26% increase in just the last year. It's now 54%. Even Piers Morgan is right. Doing a little bit of backpedaling.
And we have perfect examples of the government's not going to save your property during these riots.
Exactly.
They're going to run. I mean, they're going to protect their official buildings, their public servant housing, but they're not going to protect the private property owners.
Right. People who have enough money to pay them.
Exactly.
Give them overtime.
And you know, if you bring in the Oath Keepers, some volunteers to come in and, you know, watch over your business. Oh, they get run off by the cops because they don't have a permit.
Right.
You need a permit to protect your property?
To help your neighbors?
What are we talking about?
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. And that's why you've got so the record ownership of guns going on, especially in Ferguson. They went up 700% right before the riots kicked off.
Yeah, and they're wondering how this could have possibly happened. Piers Morgan spoke out, and he said that he admits he was too aggressive in his pursuit of gun control, and he had failed to try to understand America's culture of gun ownership. But, of course, he still missed the mark because he calls it America's obsession with guns, when, of course, we know guns themselves are not the obsession. Freedom is.
It's an obsession of freedom. And that's what he doesn't understand because he's from England.
Right, and guns are a mark of free people.
They live under the thumb. And that's why he can't understand that, because when you are a slave, freedom seems absurd to you.
Right. He tried to tell us we should get a king.
Right. Everybody's taking care of me. All my needs are met. I'm told what to do. I don't have to think. Oh, you Americans have this freedom, and you know, we can't have that. I mean, totally amazing. But it doesn't surprise me, and that's why his show failed.
Well, and it's not a wonder that people constantly are questioning the narratives that we're given. People are questioning Bin Laden, Sandy Hook, all sorts of things that we're going to be talking about on the show tonight.
And coming up, we've got two different interviews coming up. We've got a couple of filmmakers who made a Sandy Hook documentary that's being censored all over the web. And then we're going to have a couple of investigators who had nothing to do with the documentary, but one says, you know, he's a conspiracy theorist, but he thinks Sandy Hook happened the way they said it did. And the other one, Wolfgang Haubig, has been investigating it and has a bunch of questions that he can't get answered. And let me tell you, we've taped these interviews already. They are the second one's a marathon interview. So stay tuned tonight. You are going to get your money's worth. Those of you out there who are members of PrisonPlanet.tv, and we do thank you for your support. But speaking of the Bin Laden death, you brought that up. Here's a news story that's probably going to get forgotten. You know, they do this whenever they kill people. They have to put something out into the world to keep the narrative straight. And then it goes away.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you're looking at here, veteran Fox News journalist Dominic DiNatale, dead at 43. Now, here's a guy who worked for Fox up until November 30th. That's just this, less than a month ago. I don't know if he was fired or if he resigned. What? They don't mention that in the article, but they said his last workday was November 30th. But he went, officials discovered DiNatale's body Wednesday after being alerted by a friend who knew his state of mind regarding a serious undisclosed health issue. So maybe he got some news that he didn't like. Who knows? But the story gets deeper. This reporter actually went to bin Laden's compound after the supposed raid and death of bin Laden and took a brick out of the wall and sent it to the 9/11 Museum. Yep. He provided coverage in the aftermath, including an exclusive interview with Shaquille Afridi, the doctor who helped U.S. agents verify bin Laden's presence and who remains in prison in Pakistan to this day. Now, this relates back to an article from The Guardian. CIA organized fake vaccination drive to get Osama bin Laden family's DNA. And it talks about how they set up with several doctors and nurses in the area, they did this fake vaccination program. They started it off in a poor area, and then they moved it around. They actually sent a nurse into the compound. There was a nurse known as Bakhto, and she gained entry into the compound to administer vaccines. According to several sources, the doctor who waited outside told her to take the handbag that was fitted with an electronic device. It is not clear what the device was or whether she left it behind. It is also not known if the CIA managed to obtain any bin Laden DNA, although one source suggested the operation did not succeed. And then we even have, here's a giant bit of articles and stuff that Alex and I covered back when the Navy SEAL came out and said, I shot bin Laden. I think his name was Rob. I forget the last name. But you can check out that video right there, Navy SEALs ensnared in bin Laden death hoax. And that a little more than a month ago now, we put that out there. And we just covered all the deaths associated and all the unanswered questions, the fake videos, the fake burial at sea, everything. And now we have somebody else connected to this who ends up dying from a suicide. And they say it's an apparent suicide. There's going to be little to nothing said about this guy after this. And now that he wasn't connected to Fox as of November 30th, Fox, you know, put out the news, oh, we're sorry, he's dead. But then you're going to see nothing about this anymore. So did this guy have information? Is that why, if he did commit suicide, did he learn that bin Laden wasn't really killed? Was he already dead? Or was he silenced because he had information that the CIA didn't want coming out? That's a lot of questions that will never get answered because they died with this guy out in his land out in, I believe he was in Colorado.
Yes. Yeah,
Jefferson.
Yeah, and
County,
he was
Colorado.
A beloved and respected journalist who was probably doing a thorough job. And that's one of the things, you know, you have to respect that he committed suicide. He had these undisclosed health issues. Don't ask any questions. How dare you come up with these conspiracy
theories? You're not going to hear
anything
more about this guy. I predict
nothing more.
The news has gone out there. The news cycle is going to flood it over this weekend. It'll die over the weekend. And then we'll never hear about this guy ever again. 2 years later, something will come out saying, well, we don't know if he really committed suicide. We never found a weapon or something like that. Who knows what's going to happen? But this guy probably had some answers to go along with all the information that we've covered just by looking at different articles and, you know, the interviews we had with Steve Pachinik back in 2002 stating that bin Laden was already dead.
Right.
You know, it's just another body. The bin Laden body count continues to grow to this day. And I don't think we'll ever learn the truth. And just like Sandy Hook, I don't think we're ever going to learn what really happened there. They've sealed all the records to this. If anybody puts them out there without the proper authorities' permission, they could face up to 5 years in jail. So I don't think you're going to see any of this stuff come to light, which is a shame. And so we've got two great interviews coming up after the break.
Yeah, so, I mean, same thing with all those mysterious banker suicides. You know, what is it now, 36th, 37th for the year. So always these things where there is a larger conspiracy, but you're not allowed to talk about it. But that's not what we do here. We do continue to get to the bottom of things, and we really don't care about someone wants to call us a truther. Oh, my goodness, how dare we want the truth? Well, stick around because we do have some epic Sandy Hook coverage coming up for you. Rob Dew will be in studio for a marathon interview, and that is coming up right after this.
Sold out for weeks due to the difficult and extensive proprietary process behind its creation, the exclusive InfoWars Life Secret 12 formulation is now back in stock in the last limited shipment of 2014. The most bioactive form that has been created with our proprietary process. This ultra-clean vitamin B12 nutraceutical has been carefully crafted and developed over the last 2 years and is based on cellular science of how your body actively absorbs essential nutrients. Secret 12 is taken by mouth, right on the tongue, and then swallowed. No needles, no injections. Vitamin B12 deficiency is linked to scores of serious problems. And Secret 12 is a fusion of two organic proprietary forms of vitamin B12, bringing you a true nutraceutical quality vitamin B12. Secret 12. Secret 12 is an excellent Christmas gift and is tailor-made to boost your New Year's resolutions. Supplies of Secret 12 are very limited. Secure yours today at InfoWarsLife.com or by calling toll-free 888-253-3139. 2015 is almost here, and with it comes those New Year's resolutions to finally transform your body the way you want it. There's a reason over 88% of New Year's resolutions fail. Make this year different by equipping yourself with Oxy Powder, the next level in cleansing the body naturally. Using Super Oxygenation, Oxy Powder, available through InfoWarsLife.com, gently cleanses the body while you sleep with easy capsules. Tens of thousands of individuals have used Oxy Powder to cleanse their bodies and aid in their transformations. Even InfoWars Nightly News Director Rob Dew has been using Oxy Powder with incredible success.
Took it that first day, and then I took it for six more days after that. 12 pounds melted off in about a week. I'd say a week, 7 days.
2015 can be different. Diet and exercise are important, but a lot of us have already tried that. Oxy Powder flushes it out. Secure your Oxy Powder at InfoWarsLife.com. That's InfoWarsLife.com or 888-253-3139.
Welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News. I'm your host, Rob Dew. Let's get right to it. If you type in Sandy Hook false flag into a YouTube search engine, you will find countless, hundreds of thousands, probably millions of videos that have been posted, created by independent researchers out there. I mean, the information on Sandy Hook is voluminous, to say the least. And so it's kind of, I think it's kind of odd that recently some documentary filmmakers put up their documentary. It's 2 hours and 45 minutes long, and it has been hit by numerous copyright claims out there by certain groups that just don't seem to want this information to get out. Well, we're about to have two of the filmmakers on there of this. It was a large group project, and they go by the name Independent Media Solidarity, and we'll tell you where you can find more information on them in a second. But it just goes to show you that anytime information gets out there and tries to be censored, it's just going to make it more valuable and more people are going to want to see it. Alex tells the story all the time how a lot of Army guys come up to him and they said, hey, our officers are telling us not to listen to your show, and it makes us want to listen to your show. So this always has a backfiring effect. I'm joined now by two members of Independent Media Solidarity. That's Tyranny News Network and QK Ultra. They have elected to go by their YouTube handles and remain anonymous because of the nature of the information that they have been sharing. And they're also going to describe some of the attacks that they've been undergoing as a result of putting out the documentary We Need to Talk About Sandy Hook, which I have watched, and it's mind-blowing, all the points and questions that they bring out in this. Guys, are you there, and can you hear me?
Yes, I am.
All right. That was Tyranny News Network, and we have their YouTube channels up there, so you can go by and visit their YouTube channels. But Tyranny, let's start with you real quick. What was your reasoning for putting this group together or getting this group going and working on this documentary?
Well, first I want to say thank you, Rob, and to Alex Jones and the rest of your crew for allowing us to come on and share some of our information and to just kind of bring awareness to our project and our documentary, which we really, I guess, you know, the primary reason we're on is to hope everyone gets the chance to watch that. But there's a behind the story too, and that is like, yes, exactly, that how did this come about? And I would say that the person most responsible for it isn't with us here today. He goes by Mr. Stosh314 on YouTube. That's his handle. He is currently taking a well-earned vacation after months of hard work on this and has essentially passed the baton to us to try to keep things moving until his return. But he was really the one who had the idea, and we had a research group in place. There were probably somewhere like upwards of 60 individuals who were researchers and who had done videos on this topic of Sandy Hook previously. It was a private group, and we decided at some point in time after listening to his idea that this could be, we could do this. And so the concept was that individuals would produce a segment on a particular topic that was, you know, that they particularly were interested in, and nothing, would be allowed if it was going to be objectionable to any others in the group. And in the end, we basically wound up with 10 individuals submitting material for the final product. And then it was up to Mr. Stosh and myself to put a, you know, a beginning and an end and to kind of fit this stuff together and determine the sequence. And it was really fate that it came together the way it did. And so that's the backstory. And it was 9 months in development, too, by the way.
And this is a 2.5-hour documentary if you haven't seen it. It has been pulled off YouTube several times. We have a link on the article video. We need to talk about Sandy Hook. We put a new link up today that has happened. QK, what was your role in this? And was there any new information that you found in making this? Or had you already figured a lot of this stuff out? What was your, epiphany moment?
Well, I joined the project pretty early on. And I had a bunch of ideas that I wanted to present, but I kind of narrowed it down to the one thing that I did add a segment about. And yeah, there's a lot of great researchers involved with this project, including some people who didn't contribute segments, who just did support work, like a guy named Brian.
Yeah, I was just amazed at the amount of information that you guys have put together so concisely. And, you know, for 2 hours and 45 minutes, it didn't feel like that. And it's being an event that recently happened. We're approaching the 2-year anniversary right now. I guess, if you guys had like a minute each to explain what your biggest, red flags are in this event, what would they be? Go ahead and first, Tyranny.
Boy, that's a really tough one. I think that it's very hard for me to pinpoint. I've had that question before put to me and I've said, well, let me think on that. And I've thought about it. And it's really hard to say. I think really it's all, everything about the whole thing is suspicious. We can point to the well, one of the things that we have to look at is, and this is kind of a real sensitive area, but it's really a touchy area because it's kind of speculative, but it's so overwhelming when you see the families, the supposed victims' parents and so forth, and their behavior. And I don't know anybody personally who would react and to act as they did immediately after this supposed tragedy. So there's that. And that's a huge thing. And I think a lot of people kind of saw that there was something weird about this when they first saw, for instance, the one parent, Robbie Parker, doing his interview and kind of appeared to be getting into character to be the, you know, the grief-stricken father, but was smiling and, you know, cohorting with the people before he got up to the mic. I'm not sure if that's really, we try to avoid the speculation stuff, and so that's why this is a different area for me. But that's what I think would be what most people think is just impossible to imagine.
Well, and I'll say this. When that incident happened and we saw the live feed coming off CNN, we saw Robbie Parker, we actually rewound it back on our DVR and watched it again here at the office. And we put that on the air pretty immediately just saying, you know, this looks odd. We're not saying anything because you don't know how you're going to react in a situation. You know, I have children. If one of them, something like this to ever happen to them, I could tell you this, I'm not going to go out and talk to the media. I'm certainly not going to talk to CNN. I'm going to be as far away from all that as possible, trying to not go insane at that moment. But just the smiling, the demeanor. I got my degree in theater. I've seen people get into character, and that to me looks like he's, you know, getting into character. But QK, what do you have to say about your biggest, I guess, smoking guns or red flags?
Well, I'll add this about Robbie Parker, and if you examine his statement that he made there, it's very peculiar. He even sends his prayers out to the shooter, right there, which. You know, if he was grief-stricken one day later, that's awfully big of him. But I'd say that the thing that got me was the misidentification of the shooter on the first day as being Ryan Lanza. I mean, that was a big red flag right there because it's an impossible story of Adam supposedly having Ryan's ID on him and those two supposedly hadn't seen each other in years.
In 2 years, yeah. And in fact, Ryan says that. And then apparently we haven't seen Ryan Lanza in a while. And
he's made a couple of small appearances. He made an appearance at Nancy's memorial May 1st, 2013, but outside of that he's not to be seen.
Yeah, very, very peculiar indeed. You guys cover some interesting house sales that go on for $1 or $0, and then recently it just came out in the news that the Lanza house was sold to the town of Newtown for $1 to turn it into a park or something like that. They're going to tear down the house. But nobody ever talks about the guy living next door to the Lanza household. Why don't you guys go into that? That was peculiar. You guys show a bunch of footage of a lot of police activity around the neighbor's house, but nothing going on at the Lanza household.
That's right. And that was a segment that I actually did, Rob. It was basically I felt it was very curious when I saw a photograph, excuse me, a particular photograph fairly early on. And this was actually something that I saw on the blog insanemedia.net, which, as it turns out later on, we would wind up working with Swan Song, who is the person who wrote that article for insanemedia.net. And he became a member of IMS. But the picture depicted, it was obviously shot from a helicopter. It showed the Lanza neighborhood, and it showed where they had essentially set up a roadblock and a barrier there at the road at the end of the driveway. And they had a bunch of vehicles in the drive. And there was, of course, what looked like investigators mulling about. And as it turns out, it wasn't the Lanza house. It was the house next door. So that was very curious. But when I looked at some other photos that were also taken later in a series, again, from above, we see that there is tons of tracks where they've just driven over the lawn at the house next door, and nothing at all to indicate anyone or any activity had occurred at the Lanzas. So I was very baffled by that. And as it turns out, the person who owns the house next door is John Trent Acosta, who was affiliated with the Newtown Savings Bank, which is affiliated with, they're the ones that cooperated with the United Way to set up a fund, which that fund was set up the very day of the incident, I should say. We did confirm that.
Yeah, that's a little peculiar. All this madness going around and somebody's going, wait, we got to set up a memorial fund for these people. Hey, hold on. Let me take care of that. And there's been other people out there that have brought up questions. Wolfgang Halbig is another researcher that has come on the scene and had lots of questions, and he seems to get the cold shoulder anytime. He's even traveled up to Newtown to talk with people, and the cops are, you know, in his face trying to get him out of there. He's ignored when he goes and speaks at these meetings. They look at him with indignancy, definitely. But you guys just released an article you sent me. It's a very long, I guess 2 days ago now. Sandy Hook documentary phenomenon isn't about Sandy Hook, the fortress and what's inside. What's the gist of this? What made you want to put this out?
I was the person who wrote that, and I kind of think of that as a kind of a State of the Union type thing. It really just gives a real good depiction of what's been happening, because it's just been every day. We've been just astonished by the phenomenon that this has become. And I say that it's not about the details of the documentary or even about Sandy Hook. It's about really two things. The first one is free speech, because we have this issue where we have, I would say now, at least 100 or more, and I have no way of telling at the moment, but I've had interactions with folks, and I've seen their comments, and I've seen evidence that they've had videos removed that they uploaded, and these were copies of our documentary, which we welcome people to get copies of. It's Creative Commons licensed. So that's a free speech issue, and it's huge. And the other issue, I think, or the other story that emerged from this was the solidarity within the internet community. It just seems like finally a lot of these people who were real divisive and didn't come to any kind of mind on a particular on the Sandy Hook event in general, but also just as a you know, standing up for the rights of the YouTuber, the little guy. We hadn't seen that until recently, with suddenly this, you know, solidarity emerging out of who knows where. So it's fascinating, and this has been going on every day. It just gets more and more pronounced as time goes by.
Yeah, I guess people are when you start to censor information, you only make it more more valuable. More people want it. When you know, the government says, don't look at this, that's where we want to look. And when you have, I guess you guys are getting lots of copyright violation notices. I know we put up at least three different versions in the article that we posted, and you know, systematically they would get knocked down. And to me, that does become a free speech issue, where, you know, you're not using songs or copyrighted material. This is stuff that's out in the public domain. news footage. I mean, you're not getting attacked by the news corporations using their footage. I mean, you know, so what do you think is behind this to try and silence you? And why did they pick this documentary out of all the other pieces of evidence that are out there? Why do you think this is what got people so riled up?
Well, I think that this one is scary in a way to them. Let's just think of it as there are some potentially perpetrators out there of this, if you want to think of it as a hoax. And I hate to even go so far as to say that. I'd like just to get, you know, I want just the facts to be known. But I would say that if they were out there watching and they saw that a group of individuals came together in a cooperation like this, in solidarity, that would be a little more of a threat to them than if there were a lot of just individual people out there, researchers or YouTubers, that would, you know, be producing material like this. So this is probably one of the reasons why it's, you know, a real affront to them and a little bit frightening to them, which I'm actually very happy. It's just information, and we don't have anything in there that we're upset about or feel that we made a mistake on. There are some things that we think might be mistakes, but we certainly, our intent was good. So we're proud of what we've done, and if they're afraid of it, then that's good, I think.
Yeah, and
I'd say that any of the things that could be perceived as mistakes simply come from us not having better information.
Right. And you know, the bottom line is when we saw this stuff, Alex, I actually put together the report, but Alex shot it. I did the editing on it, but we said why people think Sandy Hook is a hoax. And we put this out within a day of it happening. And we just showed other instances of the media systematically lying to us. Yeah. And so we go, so why should we believe them here? And then you see in lockstep, a majority of the parents, a majority of the people in the area, the government coming together and saying, it's guns. We got to get rid of guns. We got to get rid of guns. And then the amount of money that flowed into that area by people, you know, feeling bad for this tragedy. There was lots of people out there that went, oh my God, children died. We need to do something. And they started sending money, but they also got government grants. They got a lot of money poured into that area. How much money are we looking at total now that has gone into the Newtown Sandy Hook area?
I can't tell you the exact amount, but it's in the hundreds of millions, multiple hundreds of millions.
Right.
Yeah. That's a lot.
That is a lot. And you look at other instances where they've had other shootings and you don't see that type of outpouring of support from other people. But it seemed like, you know, as soon as it happened, they were ready with the memorials and people had Facebook pages set up, and it just, there's a lot of coincidences there that just seem almost too perfect. Who in their right mind is thinking about setting up a memorial on the day of an event like this happening?
Oh, yeah.
Or even the days before the event happened. Oh, yeah. You know, there's several instances of that where the memorials were set up in advance.
Right. And you guys go into it. There's a whole section of the movie going into the caching of web pages. I want to get into the dash cam video that you guys were putting up. Mm-hmm. It doesn't show much of anything going on, and that's kind of a telltale sign. There's supposedly an evacuation, but you don't see many people evacuating. You see a few people milling about, and then the officers start setting up their lunch at one point on the squad car. Mm-hmm. And that to me seemed really odd. If any of these officers had seen the events which were told happened in there, to then be ready to come out and eat lunch.
Yeah. That's a little upsetting to watch. And I think that was something that it was a big mistake for them to have done that. Of course, it's a big mistake for them to have done it and be smiling. And it just did not fit the scenario that was occurring apparently just, you know, a few yards away from them really in the school. And I want to also, I guess give a shout out, to use the term, to Sherry Questioning All. That's her YouTube handle, who did that segment. And what we found so great about her segment was it actually became the only one where she didn't do any of the material for the documentary itself. We just asked if we could take her original video done on that topic and do an edited version where we just take it and slim it down a bit and use that. And so that was how that turned out to become one of the segments. But it was just that good. So she just tells it like it is. Yeah, there's no kids seen in that footage at all. It's astonishing that they can put out that story that, yeah, there were at least 480 or I forget the number, but a lot of kids that were supposed to be evacuated, and we just don't see it.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then a final piece that really was a moment for me was seeing the interior photos of the classroom where the shooting supposedly took place, and you don't see anything resembling any type of shooting. There, I didn't see a drop of blood. I couldn't see it from the photos that you guys put up. How many photos were there of crime of the interior of that school?
QK?
Yeah.
Well, of the interior, there's several hundred, maybe close to 1,000. And then there's exterior photos as well. And the only place that we do see blood is in the breezeway, sort of outside of the front of the school by the hole that Adam supposedly entered.
Yeah, and that could have been made by anyone. What was also interesting is, and Wolfgang Halbig pointed this out, that hole would not have been left like that if this event had happened. It would have been cleared out by somebody. Somebody would have breached the window, got rid of the remaining glass, so nobody got cut upon entry. And yeah. So that being there, and then, you know, all the cops supposedly went through the hole in the glass. They say that. And nobody's going to stop apparently. And break it out for their buddies. You know, they're going to, you know, maybe a giant piece of glass comes down and cuts somebody. I mean, there's so much that could go on there that just didn't follow like a basic type of protocol.
Yeah, yes. They say that some 16 cops went through that hole, but you would think it would just be one who would have done it and then gone around and opened the door for the other 15.
Yeah.
You would think. Well,
maybe I don't even want to say a joke at this point. It's so disturbing that this stuff is out there. Do you guys have any other final comments or anything? We're going to have, hopefully in the next segment, we're going to have another guy who claims, he says he's a conspiracy theorist, but he believes that Sandy Hook really did happen, and have him on with Wolfgang Halbig. That's our plan in the next segment. Do you guys have anything you want to add here in closing?
Well, if I could just give a quick acknowledgement to the other participants that actually contributed to the documentary, which would be Professor Doom, Odenrock, Free Radio Revolution. I mentioned Sherry Questioning All, Sandy Hook Research, who people may know as Names Not Mary, Swan Song, and Up North of the 49th. And, of course, the person whose idea this was, Mr. Stosh 314. But yeah, I think really we'd like everyone to go to our website, which is mediasolidarity.com. And that's the best place to watch the documentary. We try to keep it up. We can't guarantee it'll be there when you get there, but we're trying to keep it up. And, we also want people to realize that there's a lot going on here, and, to pay attention to come to the site and to check the news for updates. This is an evolving story, and it's very interesting that we may actually make some headway towards achieving our goal of disclosure of what happened at Sandy Hook.
And let me ask you this. Why did you guys feel like you have to remain anonymous?
Actually, it's not all of us that feel that way, but there were enough of us that wanted to maintain the anonymity that we decided that in solidarity, we would essentially just agree to do that. I come out as who I really am all the time and have the whole time through. But others don't necessarily feel the same kind of comfort level. And I can understand. I mean, we're not all, we're not all willing to pay the ultimate price for getting involved in this, but that's the reason why.
Yeah, and there are others. What, the lead investigator of Sandy Hook died suddenly. Was he a state trooper or was he a policeman? Who was the guy who died kind of suddenly about a year ago?
Yeah, William Podogorski, I believe, is his name.
Yeah.
Yeah, very interesting. We've looked into that a little bit. And QK, do you have anything to say on that?
No, I didn't look into that very well.
Yeah, but it's true, yeah. And there's a photographer, too, Eric Langlois or something. I don't know if I'm getting the last name right.
But there was also a real estate assessor that disappeared mysteriously.
Wow. Yeah, well, we're going to cover, we actually covered a story earlier about a reporter who went to Pakistan, got chiseled a brick out of the Obama compound, and also interviewed the doctor who was running the vaccine DNA program for the CIA trying to track down Osama bin Laden. He suddenly found with of course it's a self-inflicted gunshot wound, because nobody ever gets murdered when they're uncovering weird stories like this. So it's just very, very interesting how you know, people who are involved in these stories don't seem to have a long shelf life. But the website is mediasolidarity.com, and we were speaking with Tyranny News Network and QK Ultra, two of the filmmakers on that project. We need to talk about Sandy Hook. Guys, thanks for joining us, and best of luck to you in the future.
Thank you, Rob.
Thank you, sir.
So if you want to watch the documentary and judge the information for yourself, you can go to video, We Need to Talk About Sandy Hook, on Infowars.com, or go to their website, mediasolidarity.com. Well, we're not done yet. We're going to be back, hopefully, with a amazing debate between another Sandy Hook researcher and somebody else who also calls himself a conspiracy theorist but says Sandy Hook did happen the way all those officials that are hiding all the information say it did. So stay tuned. Don't go away.
The Molon Lave silver coin, certified by the Provident Mint. This 1 ounce silver round is 0.999% fine silver, inspired by the legendary Spartan King Leonidas and his refusal to lay down arms in defiance of Emperor Xerxes. Molon Lave, that's Greek for come and take it. This is available now at InfoWarsStore.com. Act now as supplies are limited. And don't forget, free shipping and a free gift. That's InfoWarsStore.com.
This is Alex Jones for InfoWarsLife.com. The latest in preparedness is now here, an electrically stabilized colloidal silver solution that can be added to both your home cabinet and preparedness pack alike. Concentrated to 30 parts per million in what has been dubbed the Survival Silver Solution, and it's entirely free of toxic artificial additives that are loaded into many products. Purchase your bottle of InfoWarsLife.com Silver Bullet Colloidal Silver today and find other amazing supplements at InfoWarsLife.com.
Welcome back to the InfoWars Nightly News. I'm your host, Rob Dew. Thank you for joining us. We're about to have an extended interview, I believe. And if you remember last segment, we were talking with two documentary filmmakers for the documentary We Need to Talk About Sandy Hook. I'm now joined by two individuals who are both on the opposite ends of the Sandy Hook spectrum. One is a writer for American Free Press, and his name is Keith Johnson. He, in fact, there's an article here that says AFP's Keith Johnson, I'm a conspiracy theorist, but not on Sandy Hook. The other individual is a man who we've had on the show several times, Wolfgang Halbig, who runs SandyHookJustice.com. Gentlemen, how are you both doing today?
Good, Ron.
So,
yes, thank you for having us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Keith, I'm going to give you the first, I guess, the opening salvo. You contacted me. And you were explaining some things, and you said this is some really you're treading in some deep water here. So in so many words. So explain to me what your position is on Sandy Hook, and then we'll let Mr. Halbig respond.
Okay. Well, yeah. We know that our government is involved in a lot of nefarious things, including false flag attacks. Disinformation is spread. I'm a conspiracy theorist, like you just introduced me as one. I do believe that these things do happen, but Sandy Hook doesn't qualify as that. There's not one shred of evidence to suggest that there was a hoax. Quite the opposite, quite the contrary. There's overwhelming direct evidence which proves that Adam Lanza was the sole perpetrator of this killing. And what I'm concerned about is not just the fact that we have 26 women and children at Sandy Hook who were slaughtered. These were my fellow Americans who were slaughtered, and they need to be honored for the lives they lived, not cast in some delusional fantasy someone has that this is a conspiracy that their parents were involved in. No. The other concern that I have, a secondary concern besides that, is that I believe that the real hoax is the hoax being perpetrated against the truth movement. I believe that this has been spun into a conspiracy theory to bring discredit to the truth movement. And I see so much irresponsibility out there amongst individuals like James F. Tracy, James Fetzer, both professors from taxpayer-funded universities who are putting out deliberate disinformation, and when it's brought to their attention, they don't even change it. I did an investigation on one of these people who did this documentary, quote-unquote, We Need to Talk About Sandy Hook. I did an investigation into his website and found that the person who's collecting donations for it is a Captain LaShawn Bush of the U.S. Army Cyber Command. So this website is an IP phishing website which is collecting information on patriots, on people who have interest in these kinds of things. That's what I believe to be the case here. As a matter of fact, this is confirmed. I was contacted by two lieutenant colonels who grilled me. I don't know what the result of that investigation is, but I mean, if you even look at this new documentary that came out, it's very slick. It's very slick. When I say slick, I don't mean that it has real, groundbreaking information. It's just the same old speculation and debunk theories. But the production values of it are just amazing. Now, you compare that to some of us who are involved in the debunking of these series. We have crude videos we put out. There's only two people who are actually actively debunking it, and that's myself and another individual by the name of C.W. Wade. So that's my stance. You know, I've been called a government shill. Just go ahead and look at all of my articles for American Free Press, pro-gun, pro-liberty. You find any indication there that I'm a gun grabber, government shill, and I'll hang my hat up. So,
No one's accusing you of that. No one's accusing you of that, Keith. But I do want to say this: after Sandy Hook, it seemed like the government did come into line, and the people involved in that were coming out saying it's time to go after guns. It's time to seriously look at what we're going on, which leads to, you know, these gun lists, these registration lists, which always leads to confiscation.
Well, the thing is if you look, Rob, in 2013, two-thirds of the gun laws that were enacted were pro-gun, okay, to loosen restrictions. So what happens is anytime there's a school shooting like this, you're going to see the gun grabbers come out, liberals like what's the ex-mayor of New York? Bloomberg.
Okay, yeah.
I've written about extensively. Yeah. His group comes out wanting to grab guns, but there's as much, if not more, pushback against the gun control lobbies by good, decent Second Amendment loving Americans who say no. And that's why any thought that this would be some kind of thing to confiscate firearms is ludicrous for them to think that they could pull something off like that and be able to get that kind of result.
All right. Well, let's let Mr. Halbig respond to that. What do you have to say? You've been investigating this for a while. What are your conclusions that you've come up with?
Well, first of all, Rob, I got to make sure I'm talking to the right Keith Johnson, because I'm just looking here. Somebody today emailed me something that he stated. And it's an email that goes to Deanna Spingola, works for American Free Press. Dave Gaheri works for American Free Press. Paul Angel, Chris Petterick, Michael Collins Piper. And this is the statement headline, Wolfgang Halbig is a fraud. He calls me a school resource officer. The guy you're talking about, Rob, has no clue as to what my life is like, what I've done in public service for the last 36 years. Wherever he's getting his information, well, I'll tell you what, he needs to come to my house and let's have a conversation, because he is so wrong. For him to call me a fraud and a liar, now let me tell you something, that's defamation, that's slander, that's libel, and he better get ready. So now, my comments to him, those researchers have dedicated their life in trying to take a look at Sandy Hook for what it is. There are so many items within that police report. It's a data dump. It's the worst report that was ever written, and it's not stated by Wolfgang Halbig. This is Mayor Jackson of Hamden, Connecticut, the chairman of this Governor Malloy Sandy Hook Commission, the advisory commission. He calls this the worst data dump. Number one, they're given a redacted report. Can you imagine? You're the commission. You are about to make recommendations that's going to change the gun laws in Connecticut. It's going to change mental health. It's going to change the First Amendment rights. And they get a redacted report. They don't even get to see the truth. They never, ever got to see the autopsy report of all of those 20 children and 7 adults. Now, how in the world can an advisory commission, Rob, in all fairness, come out, make solid recommendations that's going to affect the whole country, not just Connecticut. So if we're going to talk tonight, let's only talk about the facts, only about the facts, and let's talk about the Newtown police. Let's talk about how they responded, and I'm ready to go.
All right, yeah, and I agree. Let's talk about what happened on that day, what we do know, and then, yeah, there's a lot of speculation out there, but I think the reason you have all this speculation, Keith, and I think you will agree, people do not trust the government, bottom line. People don't trust what the information they put out. They don't trust the conclusions they come up with. They're just ready to say, no, we don't believe you. We're going to look for alternative solutions. And you've got a myriad. You type in Sandy Hook conspiracy, it's hundreds of millions of videos. Everybody and their mother out there is looking at this from a different angle. And they're all bringing their collective expertise together, where not each person is a doctorate or a scientist out there, but by people pooling their knowledge. And I think that's the great thing about the internet. Yeah, you are going to get some, you're always going to get the crazies out there, but you're going to get that in anything. But the amount of information that has been combed over, I think is pretty, definitely demands some questions and definitely demands some answers. And I don't really think we're getting that from the people of Connecticut. Go ahead, Keith.
Okay. Well, Mr. Albig says he wants to talk about the facts. First, he brings up some email saying that I called him a fraud and a phony. Well, I'll say this right now. Mr. Albig, you are a fraud, and you can go ahead and sue me for defamation or libel. If you can find an attorney to do that, you go ahead and do it. But we have caught you in so many lies, it's pathetic. You are not a law enforcement. You don't have significant law enforcement experience. Even on your website, you admit that you have 1 year as a ticket-writing Florida Highway Patrolman. Okay, you've gone on the Deanna Spingola show and said specifically that you were a homicide investigator in the past. That's a lie. When I brought it up in our debate that we had, you said, well, anytime you pull, and I'm just paraphrasing, anytime you pull a dead body out of a car, you're investigating a homicide. So you don't even know what a homicide is, Mr. Halbig. And you're going out there. Okay, you're going out there saying that you're an expert on Columbine. I've looked at the Columbine reports, even the governor's report, where it has a list of all of the people that they consulted. I don't see your name there. And I've asked you specifically many times to please give us the information on when you were consulted, because so many people out there believe that you're an expert on Columbine and active shooter events, and we haven't seen that. You have a training certificate you put up that's a 3.5-hour clerk from the National Incident Management Systems, NIMS, 3.5 hours that anybody can get. That's not the requirement to be an incident commander in an active shooter event. But yet, you're out there telling everyone that they should listen to you. You're the source. You know, I don't go out there and talk about my limited law enforcement experience, which actually is more recent and longer than yours, because it's been so long. Back in the early days, it's been so long. Things have changed since then. And you say you want to talk about facts, and Rob, you said something about there are experts out there making videos. There are no experts out there. I talk to experts. These people, I would like to see one person with some credible law enforcement experience come forward and say, I pat Mr. Albig on the back and say, yeah, there is something wrong here. Why don't we see that? Why don't we see active duty people right now coming forward and endorsing Mr. Halbig? We don't see that. We heard that he was going to have these people come forward, but they never have. I contact people. I contacted a clinical psychologist and interviewed him. You can find all of these interviews on my website, NewtownPostExaminer.com. I also, Mr. Halbig, contacted a glass expert, and I ran by his, your theory that the nobody could go through that hole in the broken glass. He said, that's ridiculous. I mean, I can read you excerpts from real experts, which you haven't even produced. You collected, what, $40,000? And you can't even give us one expert to substantiate your claims? Ridiculous. Now, people always say, well, what's your proof that children died? And what's your proof that this happened? Go read the report. Go read the nearly 7,000-page report. Look at all the interviews out there, people who have given statements. And the burden of proof is on you. If you're making the allegation that these people are lying, prove it. We're talking about sworn police officers. We're talking about people who are still there working in Newtown. You can call right now, and you can contact Officer Newt. He'll pick up the phone. Maybe not today, but every time I've called, I've talked to Sergeant Colgren. I've talked to Newt. I've talked to various people. They're still active duty there, okay? So these weren't actors in some kind of Mossad plot that Professor Fetzer believes. I mean, he's changed his story so many times. I mean, the burden of proof is on you, Mr. Halbig, and you haven't proven anything. You keep saying that you're going to file these lawsuits. You went on Michael Rivera's show on the 13th and said in 2 weeks I'm going to file a lawsuit. Well, it's 3 weeks now, and still no lawsuit.
Why are you so interested in keeping up with me, Keith? You don't have a job? I mean, don't you have a life? I mean, I'm going to give you one example, okay?
Yeah, and guys, let's stick to the incident. I understand the personal attacks. You guys want to jab each other, but let's just stick to Sandy Hook. But go ahead, Mr. Halbig.
Let me just give you one fact, okay? Let's just start with this one, okay? I'm sure Keith will have the answer. How in the world can the public information officer for the Connecticut State Police, in an interview with Scott Pelley from 60 Minutes, this is an interview that's seen worldwide, where Scott Pelley simply asked a question. It must have been a horrific scene when you were inside the Sandy Hook school. And what does Paul Vann say? Yes, it was. It was unbelievable. And Scott Pelley says, where was the shooter? Guess what your lieutenant says? He was found in the hallway. Now, there is the spokesperson. This is a man who threatens every American who gives out misinformation, that if you, on the social network, if you provide misinformation, that you can be prosecuted. Here is a lieutenant from the Connecticut Police. He is the spokesperson, and he looks at Scott Pelley in the eyes, and he said the shooter was found in the hallway. And then when you look at the Danbury-Sedensky report, the final 7,000 pages, every time, whether it's crime scene technologists or anyone else in their report, whether it's a policeman, Connecticut, or the Newtown, they say the body of Adam Lanza was found in classroom 10. So now why would Vann's lie, Keith?
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Keith. Did you hear that question?
Yeah, okay. What he specifically, okay, Mr. Halbig likes to add words to things. He was found in the hallway, Mr. Halbig says. Well, what he specifically says.
Halbig said that.
No, I know, but he said it was a very short reply in the hall. It was outside. I saw the interview, yes. Okay, so what does that mean? If you look at the report, it says that the hallway consists of, have you ever heard of like the North Hall, the South Hall? The hall consists of classrooms 8, 10, blah, 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 so on and so forth. So that's a specific part of the building, the hall, okay, which consists of room 10. Yes, if you look at where Adam Lanza's body is found in those, where you see the blood and you see the door. Who knows? Maybe his body was half in the classroom, half out. Maybe Mr. Vance was, Lieutenant Vance was given bad information. But really, I mean, is that reason to believe that this was a hoax? I mean,
stay with the words. No opinions. When Vance says, on Scott Pelley, he says, I saw the shooter's body in the hallway. It's not halfway
Did you just say that the reporter says, where did you see him? Or did you say, where was the shooter found?
Because where was the shooter's body found? He says it was found in the hallway, not a classroom, not halfway in. See, you're twisting everything. You can't admit
that a Connecticut police officer is lying. You're the one who said that that Pena was in a classroom and said that he found multiple weapons, including long rifles and shotguns. That's not where he said that. He came out of the classroom and he was talking to other units.
Let's clear that up for Rob, okay? And all the people that are going to be listening on this on Sunday,
yeah.
Let's clear this up. is Lieutenant Vance lying or not? He's telling Scott Kelly 60 Minutes.
Yeah, you're saying that he's lying or did he get his information wrong? There's a big difference.
No, Scott Kelly said, what did the scene look like? And Vance responded, it was horrific. That means he was inside the school. And when he's asked the question, where was the shooter's body? Vance replies, it was in the hallway. Stay focused, Keith.
Well, let's move on to it. I agree. Let's move on to another topic. And this is one I'll bring up. Two things. One is the squad car video. They claim in the report that they were evacuating 400 kids out of this school, and the squad cars right there, and you don't see anybody coming through. Now, maybe and this is on the film, we need to talk about Sandy Hook. Maybe the filmmakers edited that part out. I don't know. I think they would have shown kids if they saw them. But Keith, and then also you have the officers setting up a lunch table on top of the squad car, eating lunch during this scene. Do you think that's a normal response to this? Like, police officers are going to, hey, let's go get lunch now, you know? What do you think of that?
A normal response for, well, people have to eat, yeah.
I know people have to eat, yeah.
Mr. Alex makes a big deal about that, and he also makes a big deal about, you know, priority for porta-potties, where he doesn't even stop to consider that we're talking about a crime scene. You're not going to have people, you know, spreading their DNA behind the back of the school or going into the, you know, restrooms there, which is an active crime scene. And they bring these porta-potty, you know, he says, priorities for porta-potty. They didn't come until, like, 11 o'clock hour. Okay, so I can see a big reason why they would need to have porta potties there and food. Okay, so, I mean, so they have food there. What does that prove to me? I mean, to most people, and I don't see that as even an issue. I mean, there's so many other things which they claim out there that we could talk about.
Sure.
What answer do you want me to give you? I mean, people had to eat.
Okay, no, that's fair. That's fair. They just seem to be very nonchalant about their activities at the time. What about the video at the schoolhouse that shows, looks like people going in and out of the schoolhouse and just walking around aimlessly, including one of the guys in the blue coat who is supposedly had kids at his house at that time?
Well, you're talking about the fire station, which is right. A clever little editing thing. And you can look at the top corner, left-hand corner, where you see a silver car or a silver van.
Oh, I know. It does. They loop it. Yeah, I know. I know, but you see people going out one door and going back into the front door. And then it's looped. Okay,
well,
yes, it is looped.
Door. I mean, you can't see the front door from that angle. You can't see that they're entering in there. They're going around the building. I mean, what are they supposed to do? I mean, what kind of activities are they supposed to engage in? You see one guy walking around. Okay, so, I mean, I can't get into that guy's head. I do know that Mr. Halbig's associate, Professor Fetzer, made a big deal about the sign-in sign, saying that this was evidence that it was a drill, saying, well, why would they have a sign-in sign on the day of this shooting? Why would they have that where everybody must check in? That sounds like a drill to me. Well, that sign wasn't brought in until the 18th, I believe it was, or the following Monday, where that's the notorious video where you see Gene Rosen in the background and says everybody must check in. So there's no evidence that there was any sign there on the 14th. Any sign that said everybody must check in. They also talk about these ID cards on lanyards. There's an explanation for that. That's accountability software. And there was a company called Salamander Technologies, which even talks about it. They said that we provided these ID cards for the days that after the shooting took place, because you don't want people walking around. They're ID cards, and they've got like a chip on them. So you have to go in there and say, well, I'm so-and-so, I'm a parent or I'm a reporter or something like that. They give you an ID card, which will track your movements, which makes sense. I mean, it really does make sense. So, I mean, there's an explanation for pretty much everything. If there's something out there that sounds compelling, you know, we research it, my friend and I, C.W. Wade, and we either give an answer to the question or we address the topic or we debunk the claim. I hate that word, debunking, because, I really do hate the word debunking, but, I mean, it really fits because a lot of these things are just ludicrous, these claims that are being made out there.
All right. Mr. Halbig, do you have any response to anything we were just talking about?
Well, let's go back with what you said about the food. If you recall, you saw it on the hood of Master Sergeant Davis's car. Rob, I want you to picture this. They actually carry all those bananas. Now think about it. Who went shopping for bananas? You know how picky people are when they pick out their bananas at the store? Somebody, while there are 20 children, shot 3 to 11 times. Teacher shot 3 to 11 times. Somebody goes shopping for bananas, sub sandwiches, Doritos, Gatorade, chips, and they bring it back to the crime scene. And that's not it. They don't eat lunch out there in the parking lot. They actually took the food. If Keith will look, they took the food and had lunch inside the school. Now, that's a crime scene. Who in the hell is going to eat lunch where children's dead body, body fluid, blood spatter, brain tissues, they're all over the school? And you talk about porta potties. Look at the picture that the crime scene photographer took inside the school. There is one picture with 7 urinals, 9 toilet stalls, brand new. And they have to order porta potties? All you have, can I speak? All you have to do is use a little common sense. And here's the thing, Keith, that you don't understand. For 17 months, I simply asked simple questions using the Connecticut Freedom of Information Act, and the questions that we asked, such as porta potties, who ordered them? Who was the incident commander? When were they ordered? How were they paid for? These are taxpayer dollars. For 17 months, somebody can't answer the question who ordered porta potties? And then, who's the incident commander? Nobody has yet to tell me that. And why no trauma helicopters? And please don't tell me they were all dead. And why would you not ever allow any of the paramedics and EMTs inside that school? And who declared them all dead within 10 minutes, Keith? Dear God, I'm asking these questions using the Connecticut Freedom of Information Act, and for 17 months, they have refused to answer those questions. And the last one I'm going to tell you, to find out whether the school works or not, since I was a principal, I hope you check that out. You can contact anybody on my resume. They'll tell you, and you can look at my evaluations if you like. But here's the question. I requested the work orders submitted by the school principal, Don Hochsprung, the assistant principal, or the head custodian from March the 1st through December 13th, 2012. What that will show me and everyone in this event, whether the school was operating or not, because in the summertime, Keith, is when we principals, we get the school ready for the next year for 17 months. What a simple question, and they refuse to answer it. Go ahead, it's yours.
Keith, you there?
Yeah, you're 16 questions that...
No, I'm not talking about the 16 questions. I'm talking about what I just said. Why would you take food?
You asked, I mean, you said a lot of things there. I mean, which one do you want me to address? I mean, one that strikes out to me, you said, who declared them dead?
You're talking about porta potties.
Okay. What is the big conspiracy, the porta potty conspiracy theory there? Because we don't know the name of the company that provided the porta potties. What is the conspiracy? Tell me what you're going to prove on the witness stand here with that.
Well, nobody picks up the phone to call the trauma helicopters, but they pick up the phone to call porta potties.
Let's talk about the helicopters. If you go back to, I believe, 2009, 2010, The last mass casualty incident in Connecticut was the Hartford Brewery or the bottling company there. And there's a couple news articles from that era that talk about helicopters were standing by. And this was a mass casualty with, I believe, 9 deaths. Helicopters were standing by, but they were not used because they figured they could transport the victims easier by ambulance. And there's a lot of considerations when we're talking about helicopters. There's a noise factor. There's wind and noise factor. I mean, you've got to remember that they didn't discount the possibility of a second shooter until the next day, okay? And it was much quicker to get bodies out, to get people transported to the hospital by ambulance or by any other means than through this helicopter. And you keep thinking, you can only take like one or two victims in that helicopter anyway, from the research that I've done, I've talked to some people. I don't have that at my fingertips, so I'm sorry. But, I mean, if this becomes a big issue, I will go into it in more depth. But you keep, I mean, this is the thing, Mr. Havoc, is you present yourself as the source of authority on all this stuff. I don't. You see, I try to back up everything that I say with source material, whether it's an expert or whether it's something online, whether it's an article or an official document from some kind of organization that deals in these things. But, you see, the problem is that we're supposed to just believe everything that you say. And it just, I mean, you keep saying, well, why aren't there lawsuits? Well, it's framed from the premise that they did something wrong, that the cops did something wrong, or that procedure wasn't followed, based on you, okay? Based on you only. I don't hear anybody else coming out that's a law enforcement expert, someone with some significant experience in mass casualty incidents, saying, yeah, Mr. Halbig is right. Why haven't you found someone to substantiate your claims, rather than going around there all by yourself, the Lone Ranger, saying these things? Well, you promised that you were going to have these people come forward. And what about these Connecticut state troopers that you said showed you the script? And I should tell everybody, right now, if you go to Veterans Today, there's an article about an 11,000-page script that Professor Fetzer says that Mr. Halbig is in possession of. It's still there in Veterans Today. And Mr. Halbig, in a YouTube video, I believe it was with Montegraph, if you go, talking about this, he says, well, Professor Fetzer screwed up. It wasn't an 11,000-page script. So, here we go, Professor Fetzer, this guy who's
out there. We're off task. Can we stay focused on saying you look at how we responded to the tragedy?
This is a very important thing. We have Professor Fetzer and everybody else getting over on everybody because they don't cross their T's and dot their I's. Yeah, we have Mr. Fetzer, Professor Fetzer,
and he's not here to even defend himself. Keith, let's stick to what he just said. He's not here to even defend himself. And you've put out enough accusations, I think.
On that morning, who were the first three people inside the school? Keith, it's your turn. Who were the first three police officers, and what time did they enter the school?
Well, listen, Halbig, we're not going to have you conducting some kind of quiz session with me.
Well, you're the expert. You're calling me a fraud, so I want to know how good you are.
Listen, you were saying that, well, who called these people dead? The report clearly shows.
No,
that,
who were the three first police officers inside the school, and what time did they enter? It's called tracing the footsteps of an active shooter mass casualty event, since you say I don't know what I'm talking about. Who were the three first law enforcement officers who entered the school?
You're not going to quiz me and start running. We're not going to run a debate here.
That's what this is. It's a debate. You make.
Well, I just want to say something real quick. Keith, if this school has been in operation, there would be work orders, and what state secrets are going to get spilled if they show Mr. Halbig the work orders, which he's requested through the Freedom of Information Act in Connecticut?
Well, hey, I have absolutely no, I mean, based on Mr. Halbig's history of lying, who knows if that information was already sent to him and he's sitting on it. I don't know that for a fact. I don't know what the holdup is, and I don't know what the specific reason why they wouldn't do it. You know, there are, privacy clauses in a lot of these reasons why they can't release specific kinds of information. That might be it. I mean, I'm just speculating. I don't know. I haven't looked into that specific thing with his Freedom of Information Act request. All I know is I haven't seen him post anything that looks anywhere near a formal request. Can you do that for us, Mr. Halbig? Can you?
Yes, I can. My attorney, I paid for an attorney donation, and he has submitted them.
He hasn't done anything for you. He says you haven't. You said that he hasn't done anything for you. That you gave him $10,000, and he hasn't done a thing. So
no, we have not got any responses. Keith, call him up and have a conversation, would you?
I did.
Instead of just running up.
All right, well,
let them up.
And let's move on from this. Keith, what are these, you seem to want to attack the investigators. What does Mr. Halbig have to gain? What do these other people have to gain by putting this information out there? This is, I mean, to say that, A, either it didn't happen or no kids were killed or kids were killed by the government, however, or it happened exactly the way they said it did. To go through that, I mean, what do all these people out here have to gain to keep messing with the people of Sandy Hook after 2 years?
Well, because the thing is, okay, as far as getting into people's heads, I can't do that. All I can say is that I know that Mr. Halvig has been caught in so many lies. But as far as other people are concerned, okay, why are they doing this? Because they're under the false impression that there is significant evidence to conclude that this was some kind of false flag operation. And they keep passing this information along from one person to the next. Every time there's a shooting, within minutes, people say, oh, well, this has all the hallmarks of a false flag attack, blah, 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 so on and so forth. I mean, that's the question. I can't climb into people's heads, but I do believe that there is this general distrust, and this is the fault of the government. It's the fault of the mainstream media for, fostering this type of, contempt for the government. I mean, they deserve it. They really do. But the thing is we have to apply really solid investigative research into these claims before we go out and make wild accusations. People need to think for themselves, just like in this video, they make that claim. You really need to look into these. So, Tyranny News Network, I could just give you one example. In this new video that they have where he's wondering why there's so much activity.
Why are we talking about a video, Rob? I thought we were going to talk and debate the facts about Sandy Hook.
Hey, you know what? I have not interrupted you when you're talking. I'm trying to make you hear. He's asking about what's the motivation for this. Well, I can speculate a lot of reasons. I mean, just for the fact that people put comments on your articles is enough to lift your spirits. With a lot of people, so it could be recognition and fame. A lot of people monetize their YouTube videos. They're getting money off of these things. They make DVDs. But I think the vast majority of the people really are under the impression that this really did, that this really was a hoax, and it's based on bad information. So they pick it up and then they throw it out. They make their own video, and it's just basically a regurgitation of something that's already been debunked. And then, I come across it, and I look into the information, and I find out where it's bad, and I write an article about it, or I'll talk about it. So, I mean, as far as the motivation, who knows? I mean, that depends on the person you're talking to, I suppose.
Rob, can I make a comment?
Yeah, go ahead.
With Mr. Halvig,
hold on. Are you finished, Keith?
Now, I'm going to say that I was a school administrator. I know I'm a fraud, but I'm going to say that I was a school administrator for many, many years. And I have to say this on behalf of Don Hochsprung, who supposedly was the principal and was shot on December 14, 2012. I can tell you this with certainty. Being a female school principal, Dawn Hochsprung, would have never, never, ever in her lifetime allowed her school, Sandy Hook Elementary School, to look so filthy and so deplorable on December 14, 2012. She would have never, never in her life ever allowed her school to become a toxic waste dump, exposing every one of her children and school staff members to serious lifelong health risk. All you have to do is look at the crime scene photos. It's not Wolfgang saying it. When you look at those pictures, the doors are rotten. It's filthy. They got mold, mildew. Look at the outside. It's deplorable. And they call that a Vanguard school. And people moved to Newtown, Connecticut, just so their children could attend Sandy Hook Elementary School. I'm going to tell you what. There isn't an elementary school principal in the United States that would ever, ever allow his or her school to be that filthy.
Well, and I got to say this. Keith, I asked you about the surveillance video. Why don't they just release a frame? You said they had a system, but it didn't record. Who sets up a security system that you can't record in? I mean, I've never even heard of that.
When my son was going to school not too long ago, his school didn't have any security cameras, and I know that.
Right, but when they set up cameras, they always set up a recording system.
Okay, but the thing,
because it's worthless to have.
This is how it worked.
Okay.
You go up to the door and you push a buzzer, and the person on the other side inside the school looks on the video monitor and sees who it is, verifies who it is, and buzzes them in. Okay, there wasn't a recording feature. I mean, asking me why there wasn't, I can't tell you. But all I can say is there wasn't a recording feature, and that's what it says clearly in the report. So we don't have video footage of Adam Lanza going into that school and shooting, you know, those children. We don't have that because it didn't have a recording feature. And it was installed back in, I believe, 2006. And Mr. Habig, even said that he received some information or some documents which show that it had a strike plate and video camera installed sometime in 2006, I believe. That's what he said. Isn't that correct, Wolf?
Absolutely. Well, you know, okay. I think, Keith, thanks for remembering that. But see what makes it so unique? I did get something stating that that system that they have was installed in 2006. But what makes it ironic is the fact that all the major newspaper talked about the next day how the principal, Don Hochsprung, installed a new security system inside of Sandy Hook. And she made all the parents aware of it through newsletters and letters to the parents at home. So my question was, what was the new security system she installed? And you know what? To this day, nobody will tell me.
I will. I'll tell you. Okay, first of all, you're talking about an article that came out in the Courant, which was on the day of the shooting. And this is just another example of why you can't believe the mainstream media. They make mistakes all the time. And if you look at the they said this section, the principal outlined new security procedures at Sandy Hook Elementary School. That's the title of the article. If you read the letter itself, it says our district will be implementing a security system in all elementary schools as part of our ongoing effort. Okay, implementing a security system. That's not installing a security camera, that's implementing a security system, and they go on to say what the system is, where you have to, you'll be required to report directly to the office and sign in, blah, blah, blah. And then it goes on to say, you have to understand with nearly 700 students, okay, they didn't have nearly 700 students in 2012. That makes more sense for 2010 and 2006. So what it appears to be here, because the Quran just simply came across this on their website, there's no date on this. There's no date. There's no letter. I mean, if you can find a letter that says 2012 with her signature on it from this, then I'd like to see it. But there is no date on when this specific thing was drafted. It looks like it was recirculated every year, every school year, just sent out so that they were reminded of the security system instead of writing a new letter. That's the thing. It doesn't say anything about installing a new security system.
No, why does
it doesn't say anything like that. Keith, I mean, there were only like...
Keith, let me ask you. There's one thing you didn't respond to. Now, you talked about you're a parent and you have a child, okay? Knowing that the Sandy Hook Elementary School on that day was so filthy, so deplorable, it's a toxic waste dump with high levels of lead paint throughout the school, high level of asbestos, insulation, ceiling tiles, floor tiles. It has the highest level of PCP. Are you telling me that you allow your child to attend that school?
Okay, well, you know, this is based on, you say you're a safety. I don't discount the fact that you are, that you have experience in that, school safety. Listen, I do not, discount that one bit. But that's not the issue as far as whether or not the school was clean or whether it was dirty. It could very well be that that school, was in deplorable conditions, okay? So what does that prove? That it was a hoax because it was a dirty school? I mean, we do have pictures of children that were in there with T-shirts. I mean, I've seen photographs of children in that school with T-shirts that say 2010 on it or 2009, 2012. From the website that they were walking down that school. The thing is it was in operation. Whether it was a dirty school, whether that was an issue, I don't see how that works into the whole conspiracy theory. I mean, if that's – and I would like to say this before I forget. I am all for Mr. Wolfgang Halbig bringing these things to court. I wish – God, do I wish that it's some coming. Judge would entertain your evidence to bring it into court, and you can present your case to a jury, and the state can bring their witnesses, you can bring your witnesses. I wish that could happen. I don't think it's going to happen, but I wish it would, so we can clear this up once and for all. So you can go up there and say, well, the school wasn't in operation because it was too dirty. Or because, you know, if you go to the Wayback Machine, it shows that there was no activity, even though that's already been debunked. Just, you know, work
but
up the analysis, CWA.
Keith, you notice that I don't worry about the Wayback Machine. I don't talk about things that I can only talk about facts. And that's when the school is so filthy, that's why you want to have work orders. If that school is so filthy, that deplorable, and then when you saw the report that went in front of the city council, Pat Leorda, whatever her name is, and they had to pay $2 million to have all of that toxic waste transported across state lines, and children are going to that school. And the next thing that I did with Connecticut Freedom of Information Act to make sure that I'm not wrong is I requested all emails between the principal, the assistant principal, and the school superintendent, the assistant superintendent, finance department, human resources, facility. You know what that shows? That there's somebody actually working in that school for 17 months. Now think about it. When I was a principal, Keith, you could be a parent. You can walk in my office and demand my emails, and guess what I have to do? I have to let you have them. Those are public records.
Keith, do you have any response to that?
Yeah, well, once again, you know, we keep hearing about all of these requests that he's made. He hasn't publicized anything, and this just seems just awfully weird because he is so quick to post anything that he gets, whether it's a certificate or a photograph of him as a highway patrolman back in 1974. I'm just asking, and I think that your donors, people who have given you what, I don't know how much you've raised. I know that you yourself acknowledge more than $30,000. I think it would be fair for them if you would post some of these Freedom of Information Act requests, maybe put those online somewhere, instead of just putting up your claims, you know, that this script part one, script part two, and then all we find out is that the script is actually the final report. Show us exactly the kinds of requests that you've made, and then we can follow up on those a lot easier. We can see the way you made the request and see if there is some basis to your allegation that this information is public and should have been given to you.
Now,
okay?
Keith, let me tell you, since you're calling all these people to verify my background, all you have to do is call the Freedom of Information Commission in Hartford, Connecticut, ask to speak to the ombudsman, and he will provide you copies of all of my requests through Paul Spinella, the Hartford attorney. So there, we shouldn't have to debate this. You can call the Freedom of Information Commission. They have copies of every request as we're speaking on this show, Alex Jones.
Well, guys, let me tell you this. It's been about 45 minutes we've been going at it, and I'm still not convinced one way or the other about what has happened. And you know, it just goes to the, I guess it just shows to the immensity of all the details and minutia that we can dig up. And, I mean, I think as researchers and journalists on both sides of the story that I think we need to, you know, be a little more civil to each other and try to work to find answers instead of trying to do background checks on everybody looking for information, because that's where it gets into an attack the messenger type mode. And that's what they did to Gary Webb when he released his Dark Alliance reports. They started attacking his character, saying, who are you to be sitting in here listening to federal cases talking about CIA informants running drugs? I know that's a side issue, but it gets to, you know, When it's a continual attack of the messenger, I start seeing visions of Gary Webb. Keith, do you agree or disagree with that statement? Or?
I absolutely agree. But when you have people fabricating evidence, I mean, I have done just looked this up. Sandy Hook, Flexpit, hack hoax, okay? The officers are out there saying that that Flex Fit hat that was worn by Adam Lanza wasn't made until a year after the event, and I proved that the person actually lied. They fabricated the email, and I did a recorded interview with the vice president of Flex Fit, who said that the person is making false allegations, okay? And those articles are still up there all over the place, alleging these things. So, you know, and this is the thing. If we're going to call ourselves truthers, we need to stand by the truth. And we should be supporting lawsuits that are being filed against libel and defamation. If there's any truth to those, we should stand by that and let those things go to court and let them battle it out so we can find the truth. That's what I'm looking for, the truth, okay? You can't just discount the testimony, the statements, the reports that were written by sworn police officers unless you have evidence that would suggest that they are lying. You need to impeach their testimony. You need to impeach their character. And no one has done that. They have not brought one whistleblower, not one counter witness, not one shred of evidence. And that's what is required. You can have all the theories that you want, but listen, we're talking about individual people, parents. We're talking about small town cops and reporters. You guys are going after them, not the government. Look at all of these videos. It's all going after the parents and looking for children that sang at the Super Bowl. This is absolutely this is beyond the pale, okay? You cannot smear these people who just lost their children to a massacre 2 years ago and say that they're characters in some kind of conspiracy theory unless you have solid proof.
I agree with that statement, and I think people are still looking for answers and reasons. Wolfgang Haubig is one of them. Wolfgang, I'm going to give you the final word on this, and I think that was Keith. Thank you for joining us, definitely, by the way. And go ahead, Wolfgang.
Well, Rob, I really appreciate allowing you and Keith and I to come. I think Keith has a passion, if you hear it in his voice.
Definitely.
I think he really cares. I'm going to tell you what, I think it's a great debate. I think it's healthy that Keith is out there. I just wish he wouldn't call me a fraud. I wish he'd come to Florida, come visit me, have lunch together, and see me for who I am. I'm old. Hey, I don't even want to be doing this. I'm retired. I mean, had those two police officers, and Keith says, well, they never came to his house. Trust me, they did. Had they never come, Keith and I would have never met. Rob, you and I would have never met. And I am not a conspiracy theorist. I do this for a living. You know, and what really got my attention is that 3 days after the shooting, Rob, I actually made a donation to United Way Western Connecticut. And what's really ironic, when I flew up to Danbury to inspect their 990s, their nonprofit records, they had 8 police officers stopping me from going in to look at their 990s and simply ask questions. And I was trespassed. Now, is that the America that we live in? I taught American government to high school seniors, and I teach them to ask questions. Rob, I pray to God that I'm wrong. And I'll tell you what, if I am wrong, and Keith, I want you to hear this loud and clear. If I am wrong, I will apologize to anyone and everyone, and I'll run to the nearest mental health facility, and I can promise you this, I will voluntarily admit myself because I cannot put people through the pain and suffering as you're describing. Let me tell you, I'm old. I'm a public servant. I don't make a lot of money, but I'm retired. I've served my military. I've done all the right things. I've met good people. All I care about is the truth. And I don't understand why they can't answer those questions, which are by law, they're not exempt. And I haven't offended any parents. I'm not questioning any parents. I simply want to know the truth.
Well, there you go. Matt, I tell you, we got the 2 year anniversary approaching on Sunday. This is Friday. And, I think we've really turned a lot of ground. And this is the kind of discourse that needs to happen, I think, in order for on both sides of the issue. I'm so glad you guys both decided to participate in this. You know, I could hear the passion in both your voices. I both think you're very sincere. I don't think either one of you are frauds. You know, I definitely want to see a resolution to this as well, because, you know, these school shootings, there's going to be more of them. More are going to happen. And it's sad that, you know, I think it's a testament to how much we medicate our children instead of actually helping our children. And that's a whole nother discussion for another day. But Wolfgang Haubig, Keith Johnson, thank you for joining us. And next time we have some big developments, I hope we can get the two of you together again on Skype and continue this discourse.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Keith.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, that was interesting. I don't know if we found a solution or if we learned anything more about Sandy Hook. At least I didn't. I don't know. We as Americans need to come together and look for the reasons why we're getting into these tiffs and why if some people believe some people and some people don't, who's the authority on this and who's the authority on that. We're all humans here on this earth. And we've all got to get through this together. We're all going to end up dead someday. So we might as well try to make our societies and our communities as best they can be so the next generation can build off that. That's got to be the way we're going. And, do debates like this help? Put your comments down below. Let me know if this was even helpful because, after listening for 45 minutes of those two guys, go at it. I don't know if we really made any headway on Sandy Hook and with the 2-year anniversary approaching. But regardless, if you are watching this on YouTube, please consider becoming a member of PrisonPlanet.tv. It's our members are the reason why we're able to do these long interviews, do our live shows that we've put out there. It helps everything we do. And right now we're running a big special, $29.95 for the year. And that's our best deal we've ever put together. And also you can share your username and password and have up to 20 people using that username and password on at the same time. We've never had that before. It used to be 11, it used to be 5, and now we're up to 20. And it's all because the more members we get, it allows us to open up the bandwidth a little wider and spread the information out because that's what we're interested in. We're interested in the information war that is going on. It is the war going on for your mind. And that is all we have at this point. We've got information. We can put it out there. Being a member helps us do that a lot more efficiently and have a lot more eyeballs out there looking at information. Allows us to send reporters to Sandy Hook, which we've done. We sent Dan Bedondi there. It allows us to send the guys to Ferguson, the Bundy Ranch, the border. We've made many trips down to the border. Several reporters, cameramen, and all that costs money. And it's you out there, the members of PrisonPlanet.tv, that are making that possible. It's also the people that visit InfoWarsShop.com and purchase the products we have and also InfoWarsLife.com. So we do appreciate those of you out here who are supporting us. And with that, that's our show for this evening. My name is Rob Dew. Thanks for joining us on the InfoWars Nightly News. We'll see you back here next week, 7 p.m. Central. Good night.
In the past decade, we have witnessed unparalleled scientific discoveries in the area of health. But no one has put together a formula that focuses directly on brain health, nerve growth factors, and optimizing your cellular energy at the same time. DNA Force is one of the most expensive formulas to produce. Some of the ingredients in DNA Force are $12,000 a kilogram. We are using the coveted, patented, only American source of PQQ, CoQ10, and more. You want the best that's out there at the lowest price anywhere? Well, we're bringing you a total win-win. The ultimate value, cutting-edge, trailblazing game changer that also supports the InfoWar. We have produced a limited run of DNA Force, and it will take up to 12 weeks to produce more once we sell out. Secure your DNA Force today at InfoWarsLife.com or call toll-free 888-253-3139. DNA Force from InfoWars Life.
You are watching the InfoWars Nightly News, which airs 7 p.m. Central at InfoWarsNews.com. Members can share their passcodes with up to 11 other people, and your support is helping us defend liberty worldwide.